The fallout from the Phoenix Suns Game 7 loss continues. We heard from Monty Williams today. What can we learn from that? And what are we making of this loss one day out? Has it gotten any easier? We'll talk about it all on today's Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns the past five seasons and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. I really do mean from the bottom of my heart, guys. You guys, I was not feeling up to doing a podcast after watching what happened on Sunday night, and I did it anyway, obviously, and you guys made it like the most downloaded episode in the history of the show, so apparently you did not just cry all day or not leave bed or call in sick to work or whatever. You listened, and that means a ton. So show's not going anywhere. Look, I have to do this every day, so it means a lot when you I get to do this every day, so it means a lot when you guys listen. Hit subscribe, hit follow, whatever podcast platform you're listening on. We're obviously on YouTube as well. Hit subscribe there. And don't miss a show. There's a lot to talk about clearly. Kellen Olson is here. He is a writer, podcaster, editor, all things Suns analyst for Arizona Sports. It feels silly to say the former host of this show, Kellen, but it's still true, and I'll never let you forget that. But we did hear from Monty Williams today, impromptu, like 20 minutes before it was going to happen, announced type of press conference, just from the facility, just via Zoom. What stuck with you from what Monty said? Did anything surprise you? Did anything shock you? What stuck with you here?
Not much, if I'm being honest, because I think the radical nature to their loss, we're still kind of waiting to hear quotes from the players or the coach that match how it ended. And we haven't gotten that. And look, I think we've learned, especially since he and James Jones were put in their position or gotten their positions, that we're not really going to expect any of that stuff through our lens that often. Rarely we're going to get it. There was Monty's rant, whatever you want to call it, when they lost to Oklahoma City last year, when they fell to 8-8. He said the same thing for like 3 minutes and left the room. I think you were probably in that room. And then that was it. That type of thing we haven't seen for this loss, which I don't know how you feel about it. To be honest, I don't really care. And I'm not saying that in a demeaning way or anything. It's like, if they don't want to share their true like anger with us, that's okay, because they have to be pissed about it and they have to be embarrassed about it, because it was really embarrassing and really frustrating. From our lens as people who put an entire season into covering this team and really enjoying covering this team because of the way that they played basketball, and then to have it end like that, it was frustrating in a way, even for someone like me who is a quote unquote neutral, who isn't a fan of the team or anything like that. It was still in that sort of way. So Monty didn't really. Yeah. So I was curious to see if like a day later there was anything that was going to come like that, but it didn't. He did have some interesting things to say on how they look at the team going forward. But again, we're reading tea leaves at that point. Do you want to read into him mentioning Landry Shamet as one of the guys going forward? I don't know.
No, yeah. I think that Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges got the closest to conveying the level of like, oh crap, that it was. I think it wasn't anger like you're saying, which you would have expected somebody to feel that way. I think if DeAndre Ayton had spoken with us, then we might have gotten some anger. But other than that, you know, Mikal was just, I mean, it true to form, right? It's going to suck to not get to work with the guys. Like that
he
perfect
was just
Mikal
sad.
Answer, but it
sad.
Felt genuine, though.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And Cam was just frankly at a loss for words.
Mm-hmm.
But back to what Monty was saying, yeah, I don't feel like we heard anything terribly huge there. I do want to talk to you a little bit about the Ayton stuff, which I think people are pretty interested in. But the the comments about the future of the team or what he learned about the team, the thing that I found the most interesting that we heard from Monty today was the confidence thing. Because that wasn't something you really heard coming off of last season. I think that last year, for people who didn't listen to what Monty said, he basically said, you know, what he takes away is guys 3 through 8 on the roster feeling the comfort and confidence to go get a shot in a spot where not a lot is working. And I think that's an apt observation, clearly, from anybody who watched this series. But you didn't really hear that coming off the finals. It was a lot of like, you know, back to work. These guys are young. We'll have to develop alternatives to when they take Chris and Book away. We'll have to just work. And I trust that guys will improve at different things. This time it was kind of like, what Monty talking about confidence says to me is, they were ready and they just didn't do it. You know, it's a different sort of thing. I don't think it's blaming them. He still took ownership of not empowering them enough and whatever, but that felt different. It struck a little bit of a different tone than the way we heard him talk about the development of the individual players last year.
Yeah, and I don't know why the improvement of DeAndre, Cam, and Mikal, apparent improvement, by the way, like they were much better this regular season than they were last season. I don't know why it didn't translate for either three of them in this series. I have no clue. We saw it from DeAndre against New Orleans, at least. Mikal, I guess you can give him points for the way he defended CJ. I would give him points. I'll phrase it that way. And then Cam just hasn't looked like the same player since he came back from his quad injury. I talked a lot about that when he was hurt, and everyone was like, how much do they need him back? I was like, well, they need him back because he has this history of coming back from injuries and then taking a while to like find himself again. And it just seemed like he needed a little bit more time to find himself again. And that's what hurt them a lot in this series, I think, is that those three guys weren't really able to step up and kind of where we look at the team next year and kind of say like, okay, I don't think you can have those three guys be your next three primary offensive options after the first two guys. I think that you need to look at someone who is the first guy coming in off the bench for Chris Paul as the lead ball handler, and you need that person to be like a Sato kind of leader of the team, perhaps, in certain stretches. And I don't know who, I don't know what the options are, but they clearly need someone like that on top of like the whole Chris Paul shouldn't play this many minutes per game or this many games at all. Like, he had the month off, so that helped his games total and everything, but they've got to start doing load management. They got to start doing a lot of different things.
Sam Presti was right. Yeah. Is basically what you're saying.
It turns out that everyone else is doing load management for a reason, because they wore down in this series, and I don't know how else to read it besides that they did that. So yeah, I'm not even searching for answers, because I'm done searching for answers. I think that if you are a Suns fan listening, still searching for answers, you're going to drive yourself crazy the next couple of weeks. And I would recommend just stopping, because you're probably not going to find anything deep in the analysis or the numbers or looking for people to blame or anything like that. It's just a really weird collapse of a team in the last 3 weeks that is not explainable for us right now.
Yeah, it was something I'll just call myself stupid. I was getting into a debate with Mavs fans a little bit, because you can't fans just can't just win a series. They have to feel like you respect each and every component of their organization fully in the amount that they would like. And I'm not even somebody who is like, you know, a Suns fan person on the internet at all. I was just getting bothered. But it goes, what I was trying to convey is exactly what you said. They felt like it was, I think the people who obviously are rooting for the Mavs want it to be that they just dominated the Suns and just beat a one seed. And all that is true. But to your point about searching for answers, the team imploded. Like, it's a one seed. It's a historically great regular season team. There's no real anything that you would have pointed to heading into the series that would have meant that the Suns lost in this fashion outside of an implosion. And that's what happened. So I echo you. I think people don't shouldn't be searching for necessarily why or how or anything like that. I think when it's that bad, it's you know, a dozen things or more that went wrong. But that all said, I feel like I'm starting to narrow my focus in terms of who I'm thinking about most heading into the offseason in two places. One is James Jones and the other one is Devin Booker. So I kind of want to go in those two directions with you, Kellen, to not to point fingers or anything, but just examine kind of their role in this and what their role will be as they try to solve it. First, though, guys, today's show brought to you by Prize Picks. If you're looking for a new daily fantasy option as the NBA playoffs continue, maybe take your mind off of the Suns loss and just enjoy the rest of the basketball, you need to try Prize Picks. We love Prize Picks here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and we know you all will as well, mostly because it's easy, but also safe, fast withdrawals and changing things up too. So here's how it works. 2 to 5 players in an over and under, or an under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. It's just you versus those projections. So basically, think of it like you're going to pick a player, you're going to pick one stat, and you're going to say over or under on that stat. And you don't have to do 5, you don't have to do 15, it's just at least 2 for your lineup. So let's say you want the Mavericks to just die in a pit, you want to go Steph Curry over on points, obviously. And then what other sports are going on? Let's just stick with basketball. Let's say you think Jason Tatum gets figured out by the Miami Heat defense, so you go under on assists for Jason Tatum. That's your lineup. It could be as simple as that. You just set it. No pool, no head-to-head, no round robin, no leagues, anything. It is just you versus those projections. And for a limited time, PrizePicks has an exclusive no-brainer offer for all Locked On listeners. You get $50 free if a player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single point, but that's only when you use the code NBA. That's right, an exclusive offer for Locked On listeners who sign up today using the code NBA will get $50 free if, and of course when, a player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single point. PrizePicks Daily Fantasy, made easy. Today's show also brought to you by Built Bar, a protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar, and they are continuing to change the game with these flavors, guys. You've heard about Built Bar Puffs, Built Puffs before. They are the first ever protein-infused marshmallow, and they have just unveiled a birthday cake puff. It is basically like opening a tub of birthday cake frosting, dipping a finger in there, and just going for it, and it's actually filled with protein. So 16 grams in each bar, only 150 calories. You don't have to worry about the obnoxious sugar and fat and all that stuff that goes into normal frosting. You just put the bar in and you don't have to think about it for the rest of the day. Power up before a workout, cool off after a workout, maybe a snack between meals, whatever it is, Built is there for you. And the birthday cake puff is the latest and greatest. Go to Built.com, guys. Use the promo code LOCK15 to place that order and get 15% off. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, Kellen, so I named James Jones and Devin Booker there, and let's start with James Jones because it does continue a little bit from what Monty Williams was talking about. I think people in Phoenix, people who care about the NBA across the country are very zeroed in on this DeAndre Ayton situation. Monty's comments about it today basically saying his future with the team is something that they'll talk about just like they would anything else, which is not exactly a ringing endorsement. After between Monty last night, Book last night, and Monty today, multiple opportunities for these guys to give some sort of praise or commitment, and they opted not to do so. What do you make of it?
That they didn't. Yeah, and it's just clearly one of those situations we learned when the deadline passed last October, November, whenever that was for his extension, yeah, that there is a hesitation to bring him back. I'll have words on ArizonaSports.com. Kevin and I are going through the biggest like offseason questions for them. I wrote about DeAndre and like the luxury tax situation and all that stuff. There is clearly hesitation to bringing him back, and or else he would have signed they would have signed him to the 5-year max. Obviously, it's pretty simple. Like, you can't just deny that. But the question here is how much of it has to do with who he is as a player and how much of it has to do with the luxury tax bill that could be coming very, very soon. And for those of you who are like not as familiar with it, like I'll have the words explain it and everything. But basically, Brendan, the simple part is you've got Devin, who's about to be on a really, really long-term extension. I assume he's going to take that Supermax, you would think, or else things are going to start going really bad.
If the Suns 4 years, 200 and something million.
Yeah, 215. Yep. If he's not signing that or the Suns aren't offering it to him, that's a whole nother can of worms are opening. But let's not even operate under those circumstances and just assume it happens for everyone's sanity that is listening. Chris Paul is back on a guaranteed deal next year. year after that partially guaranteed, and then the fourth year of his contract is not guaranteed at all. Mikal is starting year one of his extension next year, and then that would be DeAndre's extension as well that year. And then if you sign Cam Johnson too, Brennan, 2 years from now, not next year, but the year after, that's where his extension would kick in. So you're not looking at the 22-23 season, really. That is when they'll be in the luxury tax for the first time here, unless they really pull some semantics here. That'll be their first year in the luxury tax. But the second year, that's when you're really looking at the numbers getting up there. And then potentially the third and fourth year, that's when Devin Supermax is starting to get in there. And that's when you start to get a little bit high, where if you bring Aiden and Cam back, like, the number is going to get pretty ridiculous for them to pay. And so I wonder how much of it has to do with that. I don't know. But I do know that DeAndre has to just be evaluated. And the way that I phrased it in the story is just accepting him for who he is. If you sign him to this deal, you're just accepting that you are going to get some inconsistencies with this really, really great player who is arguably a top five player at his position. If he's not a top five player at his position, he's on the next group you discuss right outside the top five centers in the league. He is very good offensively. He is great defensively. I still think I look at him as someone who could eventually win Defensive Player of the Year with how great he has improved at defense every year. Offensively, he took a bigger jump this year than defensively, but he has improved by a good stretch every year for four years now. You've got that, and you've got all that considered. But he's also inconsistent and just, like, loses focus and his aggression and his edge randomly. And you never know what is going to happen. It could happen in the series where you get eliminated from the playoffs. You never know. So that's not fun. That makes you hesitate. So to that point, I'm not really surprised at the responses and all that kind of stuff. As far as, like, James Jones in this conversation, I think it's right for him to show hesitation. But at the same time, I just think we're at a point now where – I think mainly, are we at a point now, Brennan, with everything I talked about the luxury tax, where it's DA or Cam? I think we're kind of talking around that more so than it being keeping DeAndre. I think it's more about keeping DeAndre or Cam, maybe, because if you bring, like I said, if you bring both of them in on extensions, your luxury tax bill is going to be insane. And I don't think we're looking at this as a Steve Ballmer situation or Joe Lacob situation where they're saying, yeah, $120 million this year, whatever, that's fine. Like, I don't think we're there until we have evidence that we're there. We can't operate like we're there. Because that's the thing for, like, three teams in the league, Brendan. Like, it's not like it's the Sarver thing either. It's four or five teams in the league that go that crazy, and that's it. Like, Prokhorov for the old Nets, you know what I mean? Like, he was like, yeah, whatever, sure.
And they're all in markets. Why did I say the word bigot? Markets that are bigger than this one by far, and frankly, in some cases, teams that are better, it's a lot easier to keep the Warriors together when they're rewarding you with the title every year. That's not the situation, so it would be reasonable for anybody to second guess it. I think so. I did 5 years, $177 million for Ayton, basically the 25% of the cap max over 5 years. And if you just do that and renounce all the other guys, JaVale, Aaron Holiday, etc., they're already $10 million into the luxury tax next season. Yep. So, it's an immediate question, and that's even before you're talking about Cam Johnson. So, maybe there's part of you where it's like, hey, Cam, you can sign him and then sort of kick the can down the road a little bit. Maybe by that point you're able to, I guess you could think about trading Chris Paul at that point, or maybe you think, everything else is clean enough that you roll it. It's a problem that will get worse down the road. It's a problem that could get better down the road, but it's a problem that's also going to be immediate if they were to sign Ayton. But the question that I seem to have maybe more than you is, you seem pretty confident that signing him to a contract like that is still a strong possibility. So did what has happened over the past, like, 24 hours, how much did that change what you anticipate we'll see play out this summer? Because to me, it feels substantially less likely now. It opened up a lot of the worst things that I think you had to be worried about with Ayton. And I just also feel like the culture that this team has built up, like, that's a cardinal sin to not give effort. The play that happened right before Monty took him out, but even, you know, throughout the game, really, to, in a moment like that, not stand up for yourself and your teammates, and then to get into an argument with the coach. I get it's the heat of the moment. You don't want to hold somebody to what they are in that type of a situation. But it does back up things that you would feel about Ayton at other points. I don't think that's crazy to say. So I feel like it's less likely. Maybe I'm overreacting, but that feels, I don't know, 20-25% less likely to me than it did going into yesterday's game.
I think that's fair. I think that they had already decided like 3-6 months ago what they were doing here. And it's just a matter of them getting to the part where they actually make the decision. Now the two factors here that we'll run through here that kind of change things that I'm mentioning in the piece too is one, if you get rid of him, Brennan, you are slightly altering the identity of your team. You're just doing it because what he does is a defensive anchor, a rebounder, and a rim runner with the gravity that he takes in. Those are three things. I don't think you're finding a center who can do all three of those things. Maybe you're finding two. Maybe you're finding one. Maybe you're finding like a stretch big who has a different skill set. I don't know. But you're going to be changing the identity of your team a little bit. So that is something that you have to consider when you're making a move like this. And then number two, the center hypothetically that we're talking about, where does he come from? What average to a, I can't even say average, what above average center can you get for him in this situation? Can you get someone where you look at it as like a neutral trade-off in terms of, okay, we're saying we're going to punt on potential here, basically, because like DeAndre still has so much left to his game to develop. We're going to punt on that. We're just going to take someone who is just really good and solid, and maybe they never make an all-star team or whatever. That's fine. But we get someone who is just going to be really great in that specific role, the role that DeAndre starred in for stretches of this 4 years or 2 years, really, with the role that he had the last two, and figuring it out from there. Like, I saw Tony Jones from The Athletic kind of looking at, I think he put out PJ Washington and Gordon Hayward for DeAndre as like a fake trade or whatever. And that's the kind of thing where I'm like, okay, like PJ Washington is like, I guess, in the average to above average place. He's a little small for a five. Now everyone needs to rebound more.
He's probably not a starting center. And that's to your point. I think those guys have gotten a lot less, you know, there was a time when it was like the Warriors made everybody feel like they didn't even need to roster a center, where everybody was like, you can get a guy at the minimum. Well, the Suns just showed us that to get JaVale McGee, you have to go way over the minimum. Or I don't know if they had to, but they did.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the case. It's not the same thing as it was. You can't go get that guy at a nothing cost to you anymore. But continue. Yeah, but I think that PJ Washington example is a good sort of thing of like, that's not perfect.
You get the other ball handler in Gordon Hayward, but like how, on the wash percentage, where is Gordon Hayward? Like 20%? Is he 60% there? Like, I don't know how far away he is yet to being completely
washed. He's not playing more than 60% of a season anymore.
No. Yeah. So that kind of thing, it's like, okay, you add this trade that just adds a whole nother list of questions to your team, where if you just bring this guy back, you know what you're getting. Now, again, the fun wild card of when will he be DeAndre, or and when will he be dominating? Like you don't know. You have no idea. So we kind of thought, and what we'd assumed, and what I'd been saying all year, is that he proved without a doubt that it comes in the postseason. In the postseason, he just turns it on. Not anymore. We can't say that anymore. So is there a deal out there that makes sense? Those are the two things. Like, are you okay with changing the identity of your team quite a bit, which I think they are. They would be in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's like...
Well, the fact that they allegedly went after Sabonis tells you they are, right? That would have been a very big departure. And multiple... I buy that at this point. I think that was real.
You chat about it. Yeah, you at least like discuss it. Then there's something there to you being okay with the identity. And then again, can you get Sabonis? Can you get someone who is above average to... Maybe you do get lucky enough and you can find someone who's like near an all-star level or at an all-star level like a Sabonis. But then again, Brennan, okay... We've got Sabonis now. Guess what? We're not a top five defense anymore. That's for sure. So now we're more of just an offensive juggernaut. Who do we have? How do we reshift our, okay, now we need to get another ball handler for sure. We probably need more shooting too now. Now we're just shuffling the whole roster, Brennan. You see what I'm doing? You see how quickly that happened just now in 4 seconds? So like, I don't know. It's very difficult. And that's why I feel like there's still a really good chance I'm coming back, just because of the difficulty of doing this while you're still trying to win a championship. And I don't think you can operate under this assumption because of what we saw, that the championship window has been shut, or however you want to phrase it. Like, we need to see this team for another season at least before we declare them as dead and like as they need serious, serious changes. But again, that's from our perspective. There might be different things internally that they're seeing. As Monty said, that's internal. Maybe those internal things are a lot worse than we are being led to believe, and there do need to be more drastic changes made, and we'll see them. I don't know. But James Jones is a really interesting guy to bring up anyway, Brendan, because this is the start of, I don't know how deep people have gotten to it. I mean, people have been talking about Eric Gordon a bit the last 24 hours. But even when you look at this, like, God, they need another ball handler. And then you look back to that Jalen Smith pick and Tyrese Halliburton.
Desmond Bain.
Yeah.
That would have been a reach for Bain, but it was a reach for Smith. I mean, yeah, you go through. There were guards. Even, I mean, Kyra Lewis hasn't been much, but he was there. He's looked fine.
Maxi.
That was a guard-heavy draft is the bottom line. Yep. And it's exactly, I mean, your point about how difficult it is and the wide variance and possibilities, directions you could go, and how much different the team will look depending on that is exactly why I think that the pressure is on James Jones. And I like saying the pressure is on somebody doesn't mean like, oh, you're such a failure and now you have to fix it. I'm not saying that, but it is pressure. It's either you bring this guy back and, you know, involve him in the rehabilitation project to come back from this type of a loss, or you move on and try to keep the team churning toward another championship opportunity. That's very difficult. But I think one of the central figures in that process, regardless of what direction the things go with James Jones, with the roster, with DeAndre Ayton, is going to be Devin Booker. So I didn't get to talk about him too much yesterday. I don't really know what I talked about yesterday, but I want to spend a little bit of time with why he played so poorly in games 6 and 7 and what might come as he develops his game even more. First, though, guys, today's show also brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net continues to be the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info across the sports calendar. Maybe you're not in the mood for betting on the NBA right now, and I would not blame you. Maybe it feels good to put some money on the Warriors. Watch the Mavs falter a little bit. They are plus 180. The Mavericks are. I feel like the championship stuff is really the juiciest at this point because you're going to get good odds on anybody. And the Heat, who are the number one seed, are plus 490. The Mavericks, who just showed us what they can do, plus 565. Maybe it's a distraction that you need after that loss. I don't know. But BetOnline, again, your continued source. Info, news, analysis. They have even podcasts right now. They also, of course, have live betting, esports betting, tons of new stuff every day. Head to the website. Again, that's betonline.net or their mobile app to learn more about the latest trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Kellen, so I'm just going to ask you kind of point blank, how much blame, that's kind of a sticky word. And again, you were talking about it with what happened, and it's a tough question to necessarily answer. But how much of this falls on Devin Booker to you? And what happened not only in game 6 and 7, but really this entire series? Not seeing the guy that we saw, a half dozen times in last year's playoff run, just save the day in whatever the circumstance was. He was great last year. He wasn't great when they needed him to be this year. Why?
So for the blame part, I think he deserves a fair bit of it. I don't know how much in terms of comparing it to everyone else, but he's in the top 2, 3, 4 guys that deserve it for sure. I mean, if we're using the blame word, can we have Chris Paul number one since he was hurt? I guess we can. I don't know.
The idea of Chris Paul is number one. I guess it's like, I don't put him and his body falling apart on him. He didn't punch himself in the quad, but it's like the existence of him in the space that he held on this team is probably number one to me.
Yeah. DeAndre's got to be top three. Monty's got to be top three. So after that, probably that's where you probably put Book, I think, because he was pretty good in this series. But it was one game, and I was talking about it with Sam Bassino on his podcast, and I have been the person who has been putting Book like a level or two higher than people have been willing to put him. But then I said, like, he's just not in. I thought this year could be the year for him where he goes from, I think he proved in the regular season, he's the top 10 player in the league. He's about to make first team All NBA, we assume. Finished fourth in MVP voting. He's a top 10 player in the league right now. Can he go where Tatum and Doncic are landing themselves right now, which is the next group after the the three or four best players in the world or whatever, right? And like maybe people are going to go there if Luka has a good enough Western Conference Finals and Finals, if he makes it that far, to being in that discussion. But like you've got KD, you've got Giannis, you've got Embiid, you've got Jokic, you've got all those guys, and then you've got this group really after them of the guys that are healthy right now, at least in the discussion. And that's where you've got Tatum, that's where you've got Ja, that's where you've got Luka, and that's where I thought Book was going to be. But after the way that he played in that game and just didn't have energy like the rest, look, if he would have had some energy for even the first 18 minutes of the game and then fallen off when they were down 30, I would have been okay with that. That would have been enough for me to sign off. But I didn't see the energy from him in the first quarter either, really. It was the same as everyone. There wasn't really anyone blending together.
And what was he, 1 of 5 from the field or something like that? Oh, 0 of 5 from the field after the first quarter, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2 points for him in the first half and then 1 for Chris Paul, if I'm not mistaken. It was something like that. And then I pulled up the box score next to you when we were waiting for Monty postgame, and I was like, where's the guy who has like 9 rebounds or 11 rebounds somewhere in here? The one guy who was like really, really, really trying still. There wasn't anyone like that. And he's had a ton of games like that where he's like, all right, screw it. Like, they're doing this defense to me. Like,
or even taking 20 shots.
Yeah.
I mean, you start to get like, it's semantic, but it does feel like you look at these numbers and it doesn't necessarily indicate a ton of desperation. Yeah.
No, you don't. And I'm looking it up right now, but I'm fairly sure. I know in the Denver series last year, he had like a couple of huge rebounding games, but with the broken nose and everything that wasn't going for him well, like he shot 5 of 16 from the field in some of these Clippers games, 5 of 21, but he was rebounding. He had 13 in the first game, and then he had 7 in the clincher, and he had 10 and 9 in 2 of those Denver games. Like he had games where he was rebounding, and I thought that he was going to be at least doing something like that. So I didn't really see it from him in terms of his impact offensively. I mean, he's getting trapped, and then he said it, and I agreed with what he said, which is like, I've told you guys, like, I'm just going to make the right play. And he said it without saying it, but it's like, if the right play is swinging it to Chris Paul, who won't do anything with it, like that's the right play. Like, I just got to do the right play.
Okay,
I have to do something with the ball.
Yeah. Well, here's the question. And again, it's so easy to do this after the fact. If you had asked me heading into the Mavericks series, I would have told you the Suns had an awesome chance to still win a title, and all this still would have been true. So take that caveat before I say what I'm going to say. But his, just as one example of his statistical profile, he took almost 10% fewer of his shots at the rim this year than last year. And we obviously know he can finish. 68% of those went in, which is pretty great. And he's been as high as 69% of his at-rim shots going in the past. He's great everywhere. He doesn't go to the rim. I think he did a little bit better in terms of the foul drawing this year than he did last year in moments where they just needed that. I think he had a better feel for it. But I feel like the problem, if there is one here, in terms of the doubling and blitzing being the fallback explanation, is he needs to, I mean, at the end of the day, if that's going to be the mode of defense against him, he needs to make the offensive profile like double and blitz proof.
Yeah.
And right now it isn't. Mm-hmm. Because when you're relying on getting to a 16-foot jumper and there's two bodies or more between you and that spot on the floor, you just get made uncomfortable really fast. And I think that's the lesson for me over 2 years. I think it's a little bit of hindsight now to see like what we thought Milwaukee was doing and allowing Booker to get his and just hoping that wasn't going to beat them feels pretty legitimate to me, because I feel like Milwaukee could have done this type of thing. Now, Chris Paul was, I guess, a little bit better, but not too much. The shooters were better. Ayton was better. But that can't continue to be the answer you come away with after bad losses, is they blitz Booker and that was that. And I think that speaks to the roster to a large degree. But I also think, you know, again, some of it has to start to fall back on him. And whether that's, I don't know, a post game, in select moments, being able to get a bucket that way and be a playmaker from those spots, whether it's the constant pull-up three conversation that we've been having about Booker for so long, a shot that he didn't really aggressively go to much in the playoffs this year. I know he missed a lot of the first round. What do you think? Is it reasonable to ask that of him, or is it an indication of his ceiling that that's not the type of thing he's going to want to or feel comfortable or be able to do? Do you think that there is that other level? Because that's, I mean, you're talking about a supermax player, and you can't have a built-in explanation for what is going to neutralize him.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. I definitely don't think he's like reached his ceiling yet, and I definitely don't think that there's all of a sudden like this fix for stopping him in a game. I think that what's more along the lines here, and something that he needs to, if there's one thing that he needs to prove on from like this game and this series and just like this postseason as a whole, and just looking back, is that when things are going wrong and things are spiraling, you tend to see it coming. I can't remember what regular season game it was. It was towards the second half of the year. He just didn't have it going, and he was getting into it with the refs a lot more than he usually does, which is a lot because he already gets into it with the refs quite a bit. And he missed like his third straight shot, he had a turnover, I think I want to say, and he's chasing the guy in transition. And I, in my seat, started going like this. Like I was bracing for impact for what he was about to do. And then he commits a foul that I believe was a flagrant one. I don't think he got tossed, but it's like, you could see it coming that he was going to react in that kind of way, that he was going to have like an aggressive foul in transition because he was pissed. And just when things start to spiral for this team in certain ways, I think that his next step is being able to stabilize them more than he should, because everything you're talking about, Brandon, he did in game five. He did that in game five. He carried the offense on his own. Now, he didn't score 40 points in the first half. He didn't score 30 or even 20. I think it was like 16. But no one else was able to do anything offensively, and he did it, and he did it on his own. I thought that was the best postseason performance by anyone. I know Chris Paul had the 14 for 14 and all the crazy stuff, but what he did.
Yeah, he was incredible in that game. It was one of the best games of his career, I think.
Yeah, that was the superstar stuff. And the thing that I just came back to, and I think what we're kind of dancing around and my kind of response to your question, is that I don't think it's fair to expect him to do that two times in three games, because he would have had to do something like that even better in game seven because of how much worse the offense was in game five. Like, that's the crazy thing is the offense was bad in game five, but it was so much worse in game seven as a whole from everyone else. So
but here's the thing, though, not to interrupt you, but you're talking about the top 10 player conversation. I mean, Tatum did that seven times in seven games effectively. No, that's not true. He had some clunkers in the first couple, but he did that in 6 and 7.
Well, was his team playing right like this, though? Was his team playing this terribly and having a literal meltdown in front of our very eyes?
No, I don't blame seven, the whole thing, on Booker by any means. I'm more talking about the collective way that they were unable to get out of a rut that was basically there from the minute that he landed wrong trying to block Jackson Hayes in game two of the first round.
Yeah.
You know? And I think if you give some, like, let's just say they won game six. So let's just say it's this series. Mm-hmm. You know, over seven games, I think you should feel like your guy can win out, even when other stuff is not awesome. I don't know. I mean, if that's the type of guy that he is, and I'm not saying that it isn't, and I totally agree that he's not reached his ceiling. That was more of a facetious question. I think all NBA players continue to get better regardless of their age. So I would never really say that he's not going to, but I think particularly for him, he's still so young and it's so obvious the areas where he's going to continue to improve. But I do think that is one of them, is being able to do it when the entire defensive game plan is geared in. Like, that sounds impossible, but it's also what NBA players do all the time in the playoffs. It's kind of what you have to do in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just think he needs his teammates to like be there with him a bit. I guess that's where we're at here in like the discussions, that I am willing to give him a cop out for how terrible his team was in the series. His team was like, I almost cursed, Brandon. I don't curse on podcasts. We don't do that around here.
I've never been told if I'm allowed to or not. So you would have
did I curse on Locked On Suns with Eddie? I don't think I did. I can't remember.
I've let like a few minor ones slip, and I never hear anything. So you know,
we'll his teammates were terrible, man. Chris Paul sucked during this series. I don't know how else to phrase it. He was so it wasn't that he was bad for Chris Paul standards. He was just bad. And then Mikal, DeAndre, like everyone offensively was just like Jay Crowder again, like the guy that was kind of helping them out in spots for this series to kind of help them. It was Jay Crowder of all guys. So again, I guess that's the long answer for me is that I am willing to give him a pass for how bad his team was in this series in terms of how we want to discuss him going forward. I'm not saying that in a way to absolve him of all blame because I believe he does deserve to get a fair bit of the blame. But in terms of him like actually getting like being the way that I'll think about it is like Burns and Gambo today, like he was their second segment when they did like individual segments on people. And I know like he's a star and everything, but in terms of like the pecking order and stuff, like I wouldn't put him there at all. And I think that he has a lot more. I think it's going to be, there's part of me now that is more excited to see him next year and see how he responds to this. Cause he, as he has told us, and I've talked to him a lot about, he is a historian of not only just basketball, but he understands like career trajectories and like career moments and like defining moments in careers. Like he knew playing in the Olympics for Team USA and winning a gold medal is something that like all time greats, like all of them do that at some point in their career. So he did it. Yeah. He also knows what a playoff moment like that can mean for your career. So to see how he's going to come back next year, I'm really fascinated by it because like revenge tour, whatever you want to call it, like he's going to be a different guy next year, I think.
Yeah, I guess to clarify too, because I talked about pressure with James Jones and at the very beginning, and then asked you a question about blame, and I do think there is a difference. I think that I put some but not a massive amount of blame on him, but I do think that there's a lot of pressure on him now to get better from this, and there's pressure on everybody after a loss like this, but I think that knowing the kind of player and worker that he is, I think he will internalize that pressure. I think we'll see a better player next year. And it's going to be interesting. But as I hope we're speaking to fans who are flummoxed a little bit and having these conversations. But you know where to find Kellen. He is all over the radio, all over ArizonaSports.com, breaking down the Suns every day. Maybe you'll get some Diamondbacks coverage out of him in the next few months as we all take a nice nap before training camp, or I guess before free agency.
I booked a vacation, Brennan.
More accurately. That's awesome. I am so happy for you. Where are you going? Are you comfortable telling the people?
I'm very comfortable. I'm going to Chicago at the end of next month for wrestling fans. I'm going to Forbidden Door, which is like this mega show where it's this huge American wrestling company and this huge Japanese wrestling company coming together for like this one-time thing. It's super sick. I booked one vacation during the pandemic in Houston, and that is when Omicron happened. It was like 3 weeks before that, and I was like, oh, sick, okay. I guess I won't do that anymore. So, yeah, I've been waiting. I'm excited.
That's awesome. Chicago is wonderful, and I hope that you can relax. But we are not going anywhere, guys. Aaron will finally make his return at some point this week. I'll see if I can bring some more guests on. We'll make our way through it. Hit subscribe, hit follow. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything else going on around the league.